Okay, so this is, again, this is the last of my three-part series on parenting. There's handouts from the last 2 weeks, too, a few of them, but this will be my last week. And I just wanted to review a little bit from the last 2 weeks. The first week, we talked about goals for parenting, and those were saving faith in Christ for your children, wisdom, personal self-control, and respect for and submission to authority. So those are just four goals we had for you, for your children. We talked about the importance of the husband-wife relationship and just how that has to be the priority relationship in the family. And then I showed some keys to keeping your marriage a priority and the danger of independence and the danger of child-centered parenting. So we talked about that. We talked about roles and responsibilities of fathers and mothers in raising their family. We talked about styles of parenting: authoritarian, permissive, biblical, and you can see the notes on those. So that was 2 weeks ago. Last week we talked about training your children, and we talked about the importance of training the heart of the children, not just forcing outward conformity. We talked about giving the moral reason why when you give your children instructions. And we talked about temperaments and personalities and how you can't use those as an excuse for your children's behavior. We talked about the importance of being, this thing's moving all around, the importance of being a personal example to your children, and how your actions speak louder than words. And then we talked about teaching your children scriptures to make them wise to salvation, teaching them conflict resolution, teaching them and demanding from them respect for you as their parents. And then we talked about some different aspects of teaching them wisdom and character, including respect for their peers, respect for age, using the terms Mr. and Mrs. We talked about that. Respect for property and respect for nature. And we talked about just manners, you know, not allowing your children to interrupt you, and saying please and thank you and things like mealtime etiquette. Let's see what else we talked about. And we talked about the importance of just guarding your children's hearts, trying to protect them for the purpose of righteousness, but not protect them to the point of avoiding conflict, and guiding your children to like-minded friends. And then lastly, we talked about the importance of children, the fact that children need to earn their freedom. I showed you that funnel illustration and how we need to basically constrain our children more when they're young and then let them earn the freedoms instead of giving them unlimited freedom when they're young. And then when their behavior becomes unacceptable, then we have to compress and we have to enforce all these rules and which they rebel against. So we talked about that. So that was the end. And so all that stuff is all the foundation for kind of what I'm going to be talking about today. So today I'm going to be talking about discipline and correction. And again, that comes within the whole context of all these other things that I've talked about the last 2 weeks. So let me get to the right page here. So why discipline your children? Without discipline, the child is left to his fallen nature, resulting in, one, foolishness. So the summary of Proverbs 22:15, right? Foolishness is bound in the heart of the child. So that's our children's natural tendencies, is foolishness. We'll talk more about that. But the importance of discipline and correction is to remove foolishness. The other couple other verses here in Proverbs, I have a lot of verses from Proverbs, so we'll be reading those. Proverbs 17:25, and how about Proverbs 29:15? Right, so it talks about without discipline, your children can bring grief and shame to you as the parents. Hebrews 12:15-16. We'll be reading more in Hebrews 12, but Hebrews 12 talks a lot about the importance of discipline, and here it talks about the root of bitterness. And just think about families where the brothers and sisters go through life bitter with one another, okay? And that's why it's so important to you as parents be correcting any acts of, you know, correcting your children when they're not treating their siblings properly. Okay, I think that's just really important. We talked last week about the importance of encouraging your children to be best friends, because they'll be friends for life, right? They're friends for life. That's your goal as parents. And so they don't grow up when they leave home bitter against their brothers and sisters. And finally, a more severe warning is in Proverbs 19:18, right? So your children are only going to accept your discipline for a limited time, right? They're only with you for a short time, and then they're going to leave. So they're only in your house for a short time, right? Yes, it might seem like a long time, okay? It might seem like forever, but nope, those days come, those days end. You know, our children, the days have ended, right? They're gone. So your time with them is short, so you need to use that time wisely, bring in correction while you can. And if you don't do that when your children are with you, then their foolishness could result in all kinds of consequences, including death. So children do not grow out of foolishness or disrespectful behavior without training. So that's the key point. So what's the purpose of discipline? And I, just like last week, I'm going to kind of do the who, what, when, where, why, and how. That's the points I brought up last week when we were talking about training. I'm going to do the same thing this week when we talk about discipline. So I've talked about the why of discipline. How about what? What is the purpose of discipline? The purpose of discipline is to teach morally responsible behavior. Your goals in discipline are submission to authority, self-control, and wisdom. Discipline is done for the well-being of the child and not done in anger. Let's look at Hebrews 12, 5 and 6. All right, so what does that say? What does that verse tell you about why God disciplines us? Because he loves us, right? And so that really, that's the key attitude of all parents. When they discipline their children, it's because they love them, and it's for their good. So you have to see that. You have to understand the importance of discipline and the reason for discipline and the motive for discipline is really love for your children. The goal is to remove foolishness and impart wisdom. And it's not done as a last resort after reasoning. In other words, you can tell your child why over and over and over again, and they never might respond to that why. So there comes a point where reasoning doesn't work, and there's a point where, and the point is early, you just have to bring discipline and correction on them. And we'll talk about how to do that later. The child is being disciplined for his success. So Hebrews 12:11, what does that say? All right, so what's the result of discipline in that verse? Righteousness, right? So righteousness, right behavior, the peaceful fruit of righteousness. So that includes, even more comprehensive than that, I have a little list there of things that come out as a result of discipline as shown in Proverbs. So let's look at these verses in Proverbs. Proverbs 23:14. You shall beat him with a rod and deliver his soul from it. We'll talk about the beating part later, but for now, one result of discipline is really deliverance of your child. It's that eternal perspective, right? Delivering him from hell. What about Proverbs 29:15? All right, so what's the result of discipline there? Yeah, wisdom, right? Discipline brings wisdom. How about Proverbs 12:1? And so what's the result of discipline there? Yeah, knowledge and instruction, right? Knowledge. You're imparting knowledge to your children as you disciplining. Part of a discipline is instruction. That instruction leads to knowledge and learning. Proverbs 13:18, what does that say? Okay, so again, what's the good result of discipline and correction there? Honor, right? Honor. And finally, Proverbs 15:5. All right, prudence. What does prudence mean to you guys when you think of the word prudence? Being careful, wise, making right decisions, self-control, right? It's those are all aspects of wisdom, right, and aspects of prudence. So let's talk about how to discipline children. And first I want to talk about the spirit of discipline. So discipline is done for the well-being of the child, and therefore is not done in anger. And we're going to look at Hebrews again, Hebrews 12, 7 through 10. So you see there we're talking about the father loving the child and caring for his good. So the father brings discipline for the good of the child. It's not punitive. It's done in love, and it's goal-oriented, just like you saw there in Hebrews. The goal is the child's success. So I want to diverge a little bit and just talk about anger in discipline. And one of the root causes that parents get angry when they're trying to discipline their children is because they get into this pattern of threatening and repeating. Threatening, repeating, and bribing. So let's anger. Threatening, repeating, and bribing. Threatening means trying to control your child's actions by telling the child what will happen when he disobeys, and then oftentimes not following through on your threat. Okay, so that's not very effective. Repeating means having to ask your child more than once to obey you. And if you do it, the child will always test you, you know. He'll let you repeat as often as you're you will. And bribing is trying to stop current or upcoming bad behavior, especially in public places, by promising a gift or reward. But if you do that, in reality, the child is bribing you. Okay, right. So I want to talk about bribes versus rewards. Okay, that is what a bribe is. A bribe is when you say, when we go to the store, if you behave, and I'll buy you some candy. Right. So you're bribing your child for good behavior. A reward is different than that, and there is a place for rewards in parenting. Okay, rewards are basically based on achievement and success. So you can have goal incentives for your children. Good grades in school, learning a new activity or a sport, anything like that, where you want your child to learn something new, do something new, you can promise a reward for that, and you can reward him when he does that. Okay, so that's fine. That's not a bribe. Do you see the difference? You're not bribing him or trying to give him a reward for right moral behavior. Instead, you're trying to give him a reward for an achievement. Big difference. And another place you can give a reward is for what I call self-generated initiative. When a child does some good thing without prompting. So let's say your child, you're in the habit of having your child clean your room, and he can do it without your prompting him. Okay, that's an example. Or you see him do something good to a neighbor or a friend. He does it without your prompting him. It came from his heart. So that's a case where you should give your children affirmation and praise, and actually you can give a reward for that under certain circumstances. So again, self-generated initiative and achievements are good places to give rewards for your children. But never bribe them for right moral behavior by promising a reward. So let's talk about the key to discipline without anger. One key is just to have this goal of first-time obedience in your children. Okay. When you require first-time obedience to your children, parents have a right, a God-given right, actually, to expect obedience and honor from their children. That is your right as parents. What does Ephesians 6, 1 and 2 say? We read that before, but let's read it again. Okay, so what do you think it means to obey? What does obedience look like to you? What would you say obedience should look like? What should it look like to you? Okay, when they do it, you ask the first time. Yes, Harold? Okay, yeah, they do it without being told or asked. I'm sorry, what's that? Following instruction? Yeah. Joe? Compliance, all right. So, what's that? With a good attitude. Right, so there we have it. So, those are good thoughts. So I had there four characteristics of true obedience, okay? It's immediate, it's complete, it's without whining and without complaint. So the attitude is part of that, right? So I have some guidelines for disciplining your child without anger. And again, some of this came from my reference, Fun or Frenzy, Chapter 3. Here's some do's and don'ts for disciplining your children without anger. So make your goal immediate obedience on the first command. Make sure all the rules are clearly understood with specific guidelines for discipline. Don't give commands unless you expect them to be obeyed. Eye contact and verbal response. So here is, whenever you're instructing your children, you should always require that they make eye contact with you. You know, they can't just be looking away. Eye contact means is an assurance that you're communicating with them. Okay, and then also require a verbal response. Yes, I heard what you said. So did you understand? Yes, mommy, or no, mommy. So that's it. You're requiring a verbal response, and you're requiring eye contact when you're instructing your children. So that way you know they heard them, and therefore you know that if they disobey you, it was an act of their will, not just they can't say, I didn't hear you, right? They can't say, I forgot. let's see. Provide a 5-minute warning. Now, this is something that came from Growing Kids God's Way class. It's just the idea of there's times when, let's say, you're making dinner and you want to call your kids to dinner. You say, come to eat, right? They might be in the middle of playing or doing some activity, and for you to expect them to jump up immediately, drop the middle of their game, it could exasperate them, right? So that's kind of being hard on them. So it's a good thing to give people a little warning. So the five-minute warning idea is like this. You go to your child and say, 5 minutes, dinner will be ready. Come in 5 minutes. That gives them time to finish what they're doing and you know, put down their game or whatever, and then they can come. It just avoids that exasperation, okay? That applies to adults as well. So yesterday, I was upstairs working on the computer, working on this lesson. Tanya made dinner for me, and she said, 5 minute warning. So I knew that I could kind of finish up, and I didn't have to jump up out of the middle of my work and you know, be interrupted. So I think that's a good lesson that applies to us as adults just as well. A lot of this applies, to, as you'll see, can be applied to adults as well. Make consequences related to the offense. The punishment should fit the crime. We'll talk about that a little more. And a big point here is that spouses need to be in agreement and need to support one another in their disciplining decisions. Don't undermine your spouse, you know. And this is an area, too, where if spouse, you know, a husband and wife might disagree on the right behavior for your children or disagree on how to discipline them, I would say the right thing to do is take the more conservative approach. Be conservative with your children. If one parent says they should do this, another says, no, I don't think that's a good, healthy activity, maybe watching a certain movie or something like that, be conservative. Take the conservative approach and just be in agreement with one another. Talk together, be in agreement with one another, so you have a common goal and plan. You know, the worst thing is when parents, you know, they just disagree, and they disagree on how to discipline their children, and that just doesn't work. So it's really important that the parents communicate with each other and be in agreement in how they're going to discipline their children. Another good thing is it says if one parent gets angry, the other can administer the discipline without becoming emotionally involved. So that's a good way to handle it. You know, if one parent is starting to blow their top, you know, maybe the mom has been with the kid all day and just really stressed and is starting to get angry, then the father can come in and provide discipline in a very objective way, you know, without anger. So avoiding that anger and discipline. Next page. After discipline, another do, make sure the relationship is on good ground and the child feels loved and secure. Again, it's always, you know, your discipline is part of just the relation. You're building a relationship and always focusing on that. You can't just be disciplining your children and sending them off to do what they want the rest of the time. You gotta be always working with them, loving them, talking with them, having a relationship with your children. So here's some don'ts. Don't set unenforceable rules or threaten with the obviously unenforceable discipline, you know? If you don't behave at McDonald's, we'll never go out to eat again. Yeah, yeah. I mean, come on. Yeah, words like never, right? They just don't, usually you don't mean that when you say never. So that's true in husbands, wives too. Then we use the word never. So be careful about what you say. Don't vary the rules of the game based on environment or situation or discipline retroactively, you know. Don't be played off with the spouse or pawn responsibility of disciplining on the spouse. And don't discipline all children for one child's infraction. And don't use separation of the relationship as part of the discipline, you know, where you just say, you know, go away, child. And that's not... Talking about, can there be a measure of anger and discipline? There shouldn't be. The goal is that you've outlined the rules for your children. You've told them when and how they'll be disciplined. And if they disobey you, then you bring the consequences that you've told them. And you can do that, ideally, without anger, right? Because you avoid the habit of getting into that pattern of threatening them, repeating yourself over and over again. That's when you get angry, right? Well, you get angry when you're repeating yourself over and over and over again. So that's what you're trying to avoid by bringing the consequences quickly and at the first offense. Anger leads to abuse, right? So that's the danger. Be angry, but do not sin. And if it means you have to cool off for a few minutes, that's okay, yeah. So that's an example to our children when we control our anger by not letting it get out of control. Point in time, Chan just said that when we as parents get angry, we can apologize to our children when we overreact to something too. So and that's our example to them. Let's see. When to discipline your children? Immediately, yes. And I had two aspects to that. One is time, and one is when their behavior. So I want to talk about childishness and foolishness. Okay, the type of correction depends upon the presence or absence of evil motives. So what I first call is childishness. Okay, and that can be a mistake, an accident, an unwise decision with no ill will. Okay, so that requires correction, but it doesn't. It's not the same level of offense as somebody who's actually in rebellion. Okay, the second, but if your child does childish things, that you as a parent need to respond with immediate correction. The second level of offense is foolishness, and that's an act of disobedience or rebellion. It's a willful decision on the child's part to disobey your instruction or God's commands. I broke that that disobedience or rebellion can be both active and passive. So active rebellion. And let's look at 1 Samuel 15, 22 and 23. Now, to obey is better than sacrifice. There's an example where Samuel said he was doing some good thing, right? But he didn't do what God commanded. So in that case, that was an act of really rebellion. It was disobedience to God's instructions. So active rebellion can look like disobedience. It could be talking back, refusing correction, rejecting authority, just like Samuel did. And then there's passive rebellion. Passive rebellion is more subtle, right? That's the child who pretends not to hear, he pleads ignorance, he forgets, or he does something good or cute to get out of doing what was instructed. That's a good one there. In fact, that's almost what Samuel was doing, right? He said, look, I made these sacrifices. He put the focus, he tried to bring attention to the, quote, good thing he was doing, which really wasn't good at all, and he was in disobedience. And how many times do our children do that, you know? And how many times, maybe even as adults, we can do that. We want to focus, talk about the good thing we've done, even though we've really, at the same time, we've been doing some act of disobedience. So those are areas, okay, childishness and foolishness, active and passive rebellion, and repeating offenses. Those are when our children do those things, we need to bring correction. Another time to bring correction is just moral violations against others. You know, we had a list of moral characteristics last week. We talked about lying and cheating and things like that, stealing. So anytime your child violates another, either a sibling, a peer, a parent, or others, it's time to bring discipline. And as Harold brought up, we should administer the discipline quickly. What does Ecclesiastes 8:11 say?
All right.
So what does that say about bringing quick discipline? Right. So when we don't bring quick discipline, then without those consequences, it just becomes a habit, right? And it talks about in that verse, you know, just becoming a life habit of disobedience. So I think those are some of the keys there. For when to discipline. Now let's talk about some ways to discipline your children, okay? Techniques for discipline and correction. The first thing is, really, that we want to first encourage right behavior. And so before we correct the wrong behavior, we want to be able to encourage right behavior. And we want to do that with verbal reminders, with positive words, with affirmation, and with rewards, okay? And then there's a time when we have to correct their wrong behavior, as we talked about just previously. Correcting wrong behavior can come in multiple ways or facets, okay? The first is just, and this is sort of an increasing level of offense, okay? So the first might be just a verbal admonishment or a warning. So, you know, your child, you might tell your child, don't leave your bike out in the yard after dark because it might be stolen or whatever. So you're warning your child, you're giving him instruction, and then if he doesn't do that, okay, you've warned him, you can do things like maybe take the bike away for a period of time or something like that. But there's always a place where we have to instruct our child verbally and give them warnings about, you know, hey, this is the right and this is wrong behavior, you know? So there's a verbal admonishment with action. So my example there was more you instruct your child to, let's say, put your bike away, don't leave it out in the front yard after dark, right? And you tell your child, you warn him, you put the bike away, no big deal. But then the next day that pattern is repeated. Okay, once again, he's left his bike out in the yard. He didn't do what you said. He's been warned. Now you have an action. Okay, now you can take that bike away for a week or something like that, just as an example, of make a consequence that affects his life. So those are just things we do for the child's childish behaviors, okay? We can warn them, and then we can warn them with some consequences because of what they've done. And then finally, we come into, for more severe behavior, when it becomes disobedience or rebellion, this consequential punishment. So that is applied consequences that can bring pain into a child's life. Now, pain is good, okay? No pain, no gain, right? Pain warns us that something is not right. Pain helps a child focus and gain self-control. So let's remind ourselves of Hebrews 12, 5 and 6. So we read that earlier. Why don't we read that again? Who had Hebrews 12, 5 and 6? I think we read it earlier. Right, so he talks about, you know, the punishment, the picture you get in Hebrews there is that it's a severe punishment. It's bringing, you know, talk about the child fainting and talk about scourging. So it's a severe punishment. So pain is good, and pain can come in various ways, okay? One way it can come is just by natural and logical consequences. You know, if your child is being careless, let's say he's running wildly, he trips and falls, he's going to be in a lot of pain, okay? That's a natural consequence, okay? And he's in pain, and maybe he's learned a lesson from that. But there's many other ways that you can just have sort of natural consequences of basically reaping what you sow. But then there's structured consequences. Structured consequences are when we as parents bring correction to our children. And that can take many forms also. It can be, one example is isolation. So isolation means taking away the privilege of social contact. So let's say you have children, your child is playing a game with other children, and he gets mad and he starts destroying the board game or doing something like that. You can take him out of that context, put him in his room, and have him not get to play with his friends there. So you're giving him isolation temporarily from fun, from that social context. So that's the idea of isolation, is having your child not be able to participate in some fun activity with his peers because of his behavior. There's loss of privileges, and that can take many forms, okay? Loss of a privilege to go somewhere or do something, you know. Restitution. So restitution, the example there is, let's say your child breaks a toy that belongs to someone else. Well, he has to pay for that. He has to somehow do a job, make the money, and pay for it and replace it. So he has to do work, okay? And that can be pain or difficult for him. So you can force your children to make restitution when they damage or hurt other property. They might do serious damage and not be something they could pay for easily, but you can still have them do some act to help make amends for that. You know, they might, what would be a good example of that? You can imagine a child doing serious damage to some property and he can't afford to pay for it. And you might have to be, as parents, you might have to take that responsibility. But then again, you can hold your kid accountable for that. He has to do, you know, a lot of work to make up for it. Let's see what else. And chastisement. Chastisement is the last thing there. That's in the goal. Chastisement is another word I have for just basically think of it spanking spanking or the rod of correction, okay? So chastisement is to inflict pain for the purpose of amending behavior. So in the Bible talks a lot about inflicting pain, and it uses the word the rod of correction. So let's look at some of those verses. A couple of them we've read before, but there's Proverbs 13:24. Can somebody read that? Proverbs 13:24. All right. So those three verses all use the term the rod of, you know, this rod of correction, right? Obviously, the intent or the image is that it's bringing pain upon the child to amend his behavior, right? And so what is the rod? Well, I'm not sure in the Old Testament what it really was, but to me it's any object that causes pain without doing harm, okay? For a child, so this is just some examples. For a child in diapers, it could be a swat just with your hand, you know? A swat on the front or back of the thigh, a swat on the forearm. That's how it starts when your children are young. You know, when they're 1 year or older, you know, you can start, you know, correcting their behavior. You can say no, they can understand what no means, and you can correct that with a swat. So when you're for older kids, you know, so maybe 1 to 10 or something like that, then you can swat them. Maybe you're not strong enough with your hands, and that's why you can use some other material. I'm not going to say a belt, but I had this idea of a short, semi-rigid material, some short strap or something like that, where you can get the leverage, get extra force without causing, you know, you don't want to cause harm, right? And then always make sure your kids have clothes on, so you're not don't do any kind of discipline on their bare skin. So that's just spanking is actually good, okay? There's a lot of theories about that, about whether it's good or bad, whether it's abusive. Well, the only reason spanking can be abusive is when you get angry, like we talked about, and you get out of control. That's abuse, okay? But it doesn't have to be like that at all. It doesn't have to be like that. It can be you as a parent, calm, cool, collected, and just bringing pain to your child through the use of spanking at when it's been a serious offense. It should only be performed by parents on their own children, and it's just one technique in the process of discipline with the goal of teaching morally responsible behavior. So I guess you have to, which of these techniques you use, there's a place for all of them, okay? And you have to really consider the context of the moment, and think about your children, look at the frequency of the offense, the age of the child, the context of the moment, and their overall characterization or their overall behavior. You know, first-time offenses don't necessarily deserve a spanking. They can just be a warning or instruction. But repeated offenses, or offenses especially that do harm, you know, if one of your children hurts one of your other children, a spanking is completely appropriate. You can cause him pain to teach him to not behave like that. The last point there says any form of discipline taken to extreme is abusive. So we really got to, you know, we as parents got to do everything out of love for our children and with restraint and self-control. So parenting is hard. It's a challenge, but we need to persevere at it and understand the importance of bringing discipline and correction to our children. That was all those verses in Proverbs. That's the picture you're getting, is the very importance of our role as parents to bring that discipline and correction while our children are young. While they're under our authority, that's our job. So thank you all. It's the end of our class.